We talked to her out in the Pacific Ocean. I think she was about, oh, I don't know, 200 miles from Hilo, Hawaii, something along those lines. In fact, here's a little bit of it so you might remember. This is by amateur radio, the only method of communication she had. And she's on the line right now, so she can hear it. Here we go.
Lifelong ambition to take a boat and sail off into the Pacific. And I found that at this age, I can no longer safely handle my 46-foot sailboat offshore. It just was too much boat for me, so I traded down to a 32-foot. And although this is like a little toy with not that much room on it, I can handle it. So I left Oakland, California, a couple of years ago, sailed down, spent 2 years cruising in Mexico all over, and now I have left Mexico, Puerto Vallarta actually, and heading for Hilo. And I am told that if you do a circumnavigation, the Panama or Mexican mainland to Hilo is the longest open water passage. So far, it's been, I think, 31 or 32 days. I should be there in another two and a half days.
I wonder if that brings back memories for Susan. Here she is. Susan, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it does bring back memories. But, you know, those 34 days, I don't remember it as 34 days. It's kind of an all blur. It just blended into just a couple.
Now, that's a very interesting comment. I interviewed Susan, an astronaut who walked on the moon. Edgar Mitchell, and when I asked him about what he felt and what he thought when he was on the moon, he said, you know, Art, it's funny, there's a lot of it I should remember that I don't.
Yeah, that's exactly the same thing. I know it was 34 days because I left April 28th, but I do not remember all of the days. Things just kind of blended in. Of course, I was sleeping in 20 and 25 minute stints, so I'd wake up, look at the radar, look around, no ships, go back to sleep. And sleep was day and night.
And so, you slept what, in 45 minute shifts, right?
No, 25.
25 minute shifts.
Right. Remember, a tanker or a cargo ship with about a 22 knots is what they go. It takes them about 15, 20 minutes to come up over the horizon and come alongside of you. So you have to watch. I look on the radar. There's nothing there. I get out my night vision, if it's at night, look around. No lights out there, then I go back to sleep.
What's it like out there with the giant... And people, I don't think, have a sense of how gigantic the waves and the Pacific Ocean is. It's just incredible. I mean, for a lady your age... You don't sound your age, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
To be doing this is... I mean, for most people, it's outrageous, Susan. How come? Why?
It's just been a lifelong dream to do this. And the waves out there, the only thing, and I remember, I kept thinking, there's a poem or something that says, the ocean's so big and my boat is so small. Good God, that's true. Because some of those swells, I mean, I knew I was going to die.
Oh, but, you know... That's something I was wondering about, too. Before you'd embark on a mission like this, to take a small sailboat from Mexico to Hawaii, and then further on, we'll talk about that here in a bit, you'd almost have to, I think, make peace with your maker and say, you know, something I'm going to do, and, you know, if the odds stack up against me and I don't make it, then, hey, did
well,
you do something like that?
That's exactly right, because... I've done more in my life than most people ever think of doing. I'm living my dream, and I figure if I go now, well, I go. I'm not going to do anything to hasten it, but I'm going to go. And then each day I would thank the Lord for, hey, you got me through safely.
Another
last 24.
Yeah.
Can I please have another 24 hours?
Well, it varied in conditions, I'm sure, from absolutely beautiful with nice lazy afternoons in the sun to probably the worst was what?
The worst was about 25 or 30-foot seas, 30-knot winds, surfing down, breaking, pitch black out there. You can't see where you're going or what's coming, and you just hold on. and you hope for the best. But out there in the middle, a number of times I thought, it is such a shame that so few people get to see what the mid-ocean is like in the trade winds. It is so gorgeous during the daytime when the winds and the swells are nice.
And scary at night, huh?
Oh, gosh, yes. And then I remembered I had night vision on board. I brought that out, and then I was even in starlight. I was able to look out, see the swells, see what was going on, and that reduced the pucker factor tremendously.
Somewhat, yes.
Yes.
You had, obviously, ham radio on board for communication. I had talked to you, I called down in Mexico and said, look, just for fun, see how far out into the Pacific you can hear us on 75 meters. And I'll be damned if you didn't hear us the whole way, huh?
Yeah, your signal from there in Pahrump, it just booms in. I think the only thing that's getting me now is the difference in time.
Sure.
You know, because I try to figure about 3 o'clock in the morning is when you were on when I was in Mexico.
And of course, we did publicize a little bit, just before you got to Hilo. And then, so what happened when you got to Hilo?
Oh, I have never been anywhere in the world where there are so friendly people. I got here, and there were people down on the dock. I didn't think I did anything fantastic, but...
Oh, I do.
The radio here, the radio station wanted an interview, the local newspapers, they had a photo and picture and about half a page on the front page about me.
Oh, my goodness.
I've had people every day, I've been here over a week now, every day there's somebody coming down wanting to take me somewhere and show me some more of the island. In fact, while I was here waiting on the phone...
Yes.
Lady came down, and she wants to take me up to see the volcanoes tomorrow.
No kidding.
It's amazing. It's
Susan, hold on one moment. I want to do a quick break so I can get it out of the way and then get more of this story. Susan, just having traversed the wild, wild Pacific Ocean between Mexico and Hawaii. You know, I think the thing that would utterly freak me out would be awakening from a nap and looking up and seeing the something Maru, a million-ton freighter bearing down on my little sailboat. Do you ever have a...
Oh, God, yes. And that has not happened. I have dreamed about it, but it's not happened.
I can imagine the Crusher Maru, and just to look up and see this steel bearing down on you. That how much of a danger is that when you're sailing?
If you're in the shipping lanes, yes. From on the 3,000-mile trip across, I must have run across maybe 6 or 7 large ships, but the closest one only came about 3 miles away. So I'm not really in much of the shipping lanes.
Some friends and I were having a discussion, Susan. You have radar on board of some kind, right?
Right. I have a 24-mile radar, but I usually pick up the big ships about 16, 17 miles away.
Uh-huh. So a big ship, you might see it 16, 17 miles in time. How much time is that between you and that ship coming together if that were to happen?
Well, they're doing 22 knots, so you're maybe, half hour, 45 minutes, something like that, till they come up to you.
Hmm. You had ham radio, you had some radar. I'm told that you've got to put some kind of cross-section up on your mast, some sort of, like, aluminum or metal so that people can...
Yes, you do. You try and put up a cross-section. It forms a corner reflector.
Uh-huh.
You know, which I know you're familiar with.
Sure.
But I have 3 of those radar reflectors up there, and I would call them on the radio and say, do you see me? No. Do you see my lights? No.
Yes.
Just a moment. I'll turn on a strobe light. I turn on the strobe light on the top of my mast. They say, there you are.
Ah.
Yes. We do have a small target.
A small target.
So even though it is illegal, when I see a vessel... I call them on the radio and say, I'm turning on my strobe light.
Why is that not legal?
Well, that means distress or whatever.
Oh, I see. Well, so, if you're telling them you're doing it.
Yeah, I tell them I'm doing it. I leave it on until they come abeam of me, and then I turn it off.
All right. I remember when you were like, oh, maybe a little better than halfway there, Susan. I connected with you on 20 meters briefly, and I asked you how it was going and whether you'd change your mind and you were going to like continue on into the Pacific beyond Hawaii. And you said, no, I'm miserable. This is not what I thought it was going to be. It was kind of a depressed time for you. You remember that?
Yes, and Bob, K5SAV, a man I talk to daily on the radio on 20 meters, he recognized that I was really getting depressed, and he took me off frequency, and we talked quite a bit. And he always buoyed me up and made me feel better. And then I had email also, and I would email my children, and they would email back, so.
So it was sort of a mid depression, a midway depression kind of deal.
Mid-Pacific depression.
Yeah.
Well, it's something, there's no way that you can prepare for this. You don't know what it's going to be until you get out there.
Well, now you've experienced it. You found out what you did or didn't prepare for. And so, what are you going to do now? Are you going to remain until August and then take off again? Or are you going to make roots in Hawaii?
Well, if there, I'm going to Pearl Harbor. The Navy has invited me to come into the marina there.
No kidding.
Yeah, I'm going. Of course, I'm retired military,
Uh-huh.
so I'm going into the Pearl Harbor Marina for about a month, and then by August 1st, I want to be out of Hawaii and on my way to the Marshall Islands.
Oh my
because
God.
that's another 2,100 miles.
Oh my God.
And Marshall Islands are about 5 to 7 degrees above the equator, so they don't have cyclones. And it's supposed to be a fantastic place. Oh, and Art,
that's
you
a
would love mid-Pacific.
Well, I love the Pacific. I lived on Okinawa for 10 years.
The radio conditions are much quieter than high desert in Nevada.
Oh, I can imagine that. I just finished listening to all the static we're putting up with yet again tonight. All the Midwest thunderstorms are raging away, believe me, Susan. Did you have any serious, real serious moments on the voyage to Hawaii?
Yes, I did, because somewhere out there, I forget exactly where, I think about three quarters of the way across, I did an accidental jibe with a boat, and the boom swung across with such force that it actually ripped components right off of the boat. And I had no choice, even though it was bouncing around, I had to climb up there and repair things and make jury rig so that I could continue going.
God.
That did get to me.
I can well imagine, sure. But you're not deterred. You're going to keep going.
This is my life's dream. I've been planning this since 1952.
Well, what is the end of this dream? I mean, you were a resident of Pahrump, technically, at least,
Right.
because when one looks, oh, by the way, your call letters, W7KFI.
Right.
How did you get those call letters? I mean, I have an affiliate, KFI, there in Los Angeles, and
When I came to Nevada, oh, 30 years ago, whenever, that's what the that that time you had to change. I was a W2. You had to change your call to a W7, and that's what the FCC changed it to.
Oh, so that's not a vanity call. They just gave that boy, talk about a stroke of luck.
Right.
Yikes. All right. So you're ultimately, anyway, you're looking for a place to live.
That's right. I'm looking for a place to live, and I want to look at the Marshall Islands, Apia in Western Samoa, and Palau. And if I'll hit lots of places in between. And after about 3 years, I'll go back to wherever it was that I really liked, or I will continue on to Phuket, Thailand, because I really love Thailand.
It is a beautiful country.
That it
I've been
is.
there too.
And the people are fantastic.
So you're it's sort of a just sort of I don't know. I'm leaving here and I'm not coming back, and I'm going to go find a place I like, and when I'll know it when I find it, and that's where I'll end up.
That's it exactly. It's been a lifelong deal. I remember when I first got my license, I used to hear about read about Danny Wheel on the yacht Yasmi, ham
Yes.
radio operator.
Yes.
And I said, my gosh, I want to do that. So my whole life has been aimed towards getting to the point where I could do it. And now here I am.
Sure have done it. Is there anything at all, being the curious ham operator I am, that you're going to change? I mean, was your antenna appropriate? Was your radio the one you wanted? Would you change anything?
I am going to change from a backstay to a sloping dipole.
Ah.
And I think that will work out a little bit better. And I started work today on satellite. I'll be within 2 or 3 days, I'll be working ham satellites.
Oh, well, there might be. I suppose as you get out into the Pacific, it's going to get a little rougher.
That's true.
The further out you get. So satellite is a good idea.
Yeah, and then there are a lot of hams that want contacts from particular locations in the Pacific in the grid squares. And sure, I'll be happy to do that.
Yes, these contest people. It's a it's a total madness. Anyway, I guess you're going to still be there for a while. So
I'll be here. I talked to the commanding officer of the Coast Guard cutter here, the Kiska.
Yes.
And he says I should wait until there's a period of about 3 days when the trade winds drop and then run like heck to get out of here, because through the channels here in Hawaii, they scare the heck out of me, because with trade winds going, you can easily get 50 and 60-foot waves.
Oh, my.
And I want nothing to do with it. So I'm going to bypass most of Hawaii and go maybe 50 miles offshore, go along the north of the islands, and then at the last channel, trust to luck and cut down towards Oahu and the Navy base.
Whew. Well, as you know, we will follow you for as long as we're able. And if the press or whatever wants to get hold of you, I wouldn't begin. They obviously found you. I don't know how. Maybe the Hilo Harbor is small, and you just say, hey, where's Susan? And they point.
That's about it.
Really?
It's that small.
So
Radio Bay, I'm in Radio Bay. There's room for maybe 15 boats here, and that's it.
Wow. Had you ever considered taking a shipmate, or is your
yes, but I haven't found anyone brave enough or stupid enough to go with me.
Have you actually consulted with people about this? I mean, that have considered it and then said, well, you know what? I don't think so.
I did, yes. There was one girl in Mexico that was going to go with me, but I make it a point, if I'm going to have a crew member, I lay everything they have out in the dock and we go through it. And I found too many drugs. And I said, no.
Oh.
We don't do that on my boat.
No.
And I said, thank you very much, but you'll have to go with someone else. And it just, you can lose your boat to the Coast Guard.
God, what a trip. I mean, to just lay your life out and say, this is it, I'm going to do it, come hell or high water.
Well, the boat I have is a very strong boat. It's three hulls, fiberglass, wood fiberglass. It's a Challenger 32, and the boat can take more than I can. And then I have sail mail and wind length, for email.
Right.
Which lets me keep in contact with people, and the Pacific Seafarers Net every afternoon to check in, and people are following me and wanting to know where I'm at and what's going on.
If anybody out in this audience wants to do something like this, do you have any advice for them?
Yes, in the food category. Bring along things that are really going to spark your taste buds. Halfway across, I couldn't look another bowl of rice in the face. And then I started, what I did is I hid a jar of dill pickles on board. I hid packages of M&Ms. I had things hidden all over the boat. And I would start, I didn't know where they were, and I would scramble and find them and say, oh my God, look at this.
M&Ms! Civilization!
Right.
It's here! Oh, well, what you have done is absolutely incredible. I'm sure that you could, and you know, you could write a book.
The people at Borders here have already said, we want to be on the book signing. And I said, I haven't finished the voyage, let alone done the book.
Susan, thanks for the interview. as you went, well, listen, when you get ready to head west, we'll do another one.
Okay, good
All
enough.
All right.
I'll see you on 80 meters.
Take care. Very briefly, around the world, the Aruba story continues to be a virtual mystery. Three young men who took an Alabama honor student to the beach before she disappeared must stay in jail, according to a judge. But there are now denials that there was some sort of confession and somebody was going to be willing to point to the body. And so everybody prays she's still alive. Tropical storm Arlene weakened as it blew ashore Saturday on the Gulf Coast, but still packed enough punch that it brought sheets of rain, 20-foot waves, heavy winds to the same area that was devastated by Hurricane Ivan 9 months ago. And I'm sure the people in Florida are sort of bracing themselves. This seems like an early start to what could be a bad year. A former commando in the feared Wolf Brigade blew himself up after sneaking into the morning roll call at the unit's heavily fortified headquarters Saturday. One series of weekend insurgent attacks that killed at least 35, including youngsters waiting to buy sandwiches and ice cream. So it just goes on and on and on. An Army sergeant convicted of shooting two fellow soldiers to death last year at his farmhouse is going to serve life in prison, no chance of parole. The world's richest countries agreed Saturday to a historic deal to write off more than $40 billion in debt owed by the very poorest nations in the world. So, what, you know, that's interesting. We just write off $40 billion in debt. So who pays for that? You ever wonder about that kind of stuff? I mean, okay, we write it off. We say, all right, so you don't owe us the $40 billion, that's a lot of money. You don't owe us the $40 billion anymore. So then who has to come up with that $40 billion? No, well, to forgive is good. The water in the Great Salt Lake has begun rising again after years of drought, changing the landscape, starting to submerge one of Utah's best-known artifacts, an enormous earth sculpture called the Spiral Jetty. The 6 years of drought had allowed the curious to flock to the lakeside to see the 1,500-foot-long salt-encrusted spiral that Robert Smithson built in 1970 using backhoes to pile up rock and earth. And that's kind of the state of the world, such as it is. And I'll hold the other, or the rest of the news, as Paul would say, for tomorrow evening in order to get a few of you in. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Tammy calling from San Antonio.
Hey, Tammy.
Long-time listener. First-time caller, and I'm happy to be able to talk to you tonight. Listen, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about cats because I'm in my mid-40s, and I've been allergic to cats my whole life. But about 2 years ago, a kitten showed up at my door and wouldn't go away, and one of my friends told me that I kind of had to feed it or take it to the pound. And, you know, and I'm talking about allergies that would have me in the hospital if I went to somebody's house and stayed too long. You know,
serious,
if they had a cat.
Yeah.
Right. And over a period of time, I let him in, and he didn't make me sick. He sleeps on top of me. And I went to the vet to get all the shots, and they told me that all these years I've been probably treated for the dander, but that a lot of people are allergic to cat urine. And this guy would never get used to a litter box, so he goes outside. He goes to the door like the dog and asks to go out. And I thought people ought to know that, who've always wanted a cat, that...
Well,
you know, it could be the urine.
Well, maybe. Or maybe you never were allergic to cats, or maybe you simply grew out of it. I mean, it does happen. My wife has asthma, and all her early life, her mom told her that she was allergic to cats. And as soon as we got married, first night, in fact, we got a cat. And doggone, it hasn't bothered her a bit. And now we have a total of four. Heaven help us, and she's not bothered at all. So I don't know.
Maybe they cure you. Maybe it's one of their magical powers.
They do. They do seem mystical, don't they?
They absolutely do.
The Egyptian.
I'm a cat convert.
The Egyptians certainly thought so.
Absolutely. I can see why.
And well, me too. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
And take care. That is interesting. But that occurred with my wife as well. Cats are mystical creatures. There's no doubt about it. If you have cats, you know what I mean. If not, then you're probably going, ha, 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 yeah, right, mystical, sure. Well, they are. Their little personalities are extremely distinct and full of mystery. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, thanks so much. Hey, this is Jim from Cupertino, a medical marijuana activist and grower.
Ah, yes.
And I just want to just say real quick, you know, everybody that may be watching this race decision in the Supreme Court, forget marijuana. Look at federalism. I'm with Clarence Thomas on this. Did you look at Clarence Thomas's, how he sided with the marijuana patients?
Yes.
I mean, people need to understand how important this is. For example, yourself, doesn't this sort of tell the FCC that they can just do whatever they want, regardless of state laws? Or, I'm still trying to think of what other areas get affected by this. They basically said if Congress could make a law strong enough that it's enforceable, you know, without the Supreme Court really reviewing it.
Yes. I'm sure that you were sort of crushed, were you not, by the, I mean, we haven't talked since California.
Well, the super quick summary is that most of the patients are following what our attorney general said. He said that the laws aren't changing, the Supreme Court doesn't affect the state law. But it really does. I won't go into my long explanation here, but, you know, for example, when I go into a planning department to try to open a dispensary, I used to be able to tell them that it's not totally against federal law because
right.
of this pending case. Now we can't use that argument.
Right.
If I were to try to create a 501c3 nonprofit, which I was on track to, that's no longer a possibility related to distribution of marijuana to poor people. So, you know, in the marijuana world, people aren't taking it seriously, but I'll finish up by saying the law may not change, but the ability of any officer to enforce federal law is there.
All right. I appreciate your call and your continued fight. I don't think that with the present administration you're going to see anything particularly favorable occur. It may take a change in some of the federal judges that have been appointed. It may take a new administration. It may take a new attitude. But eventually, and I think within our lifetimes, the U.S. government is going to reverse or change its position about marijuana. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art. Thank you for taking my call.
Very welcome.
This is Bruce. I'm calling from Newport, Rhode Island.
And what was your name? I'm sorry, your name again? You're on a distorted cell phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. The name was Brooke, and I'm calling from Newport, Rhode Island,
Very
home
good.
Of the America's Cup.
Okay. Oh, yes.
And the Newport War College and Naval Base, which incidentally is not closing. I had a comment and a question, and the comment was Susan's a really remarkable woman.
Yes.
And person, and she would certainly be welcome in Newport, and I hope she can manage to visit us. And the question is, regarding remarkable people, at one point in December, you had a psychic named Suleiman from Vancouver, British Columbia, and Ed Daines was on the program, and Ed Daines was extremely impressed with Suleiman, and so have I. And I was wondering, since you were talking about having psychics on your program that impressed you, if there was any way you can have Suleiman as a guest.
I don't remember him. I don't remember him being on with Ed Daines. No.
Well, he called in, and Ed Daines was on the show.
Oh, he was a caller.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
And Ed Daines
That's
was
different.
On the show, and Ed Daines was very impressed with him, and I certainly was also.
I don't know. I suppose if he wants to contact me, I'd be willing to look at it. That's different. I thought you were referring to a scheduled guest, and I didn't recall anybody by that that name. Incidentally, Thursday, I received the video up on the website. My God, this is an incredible video of lights in Phoenix. This is not just a light in Phoenix. I don't know whether you've been to the coasttocoastam.com website yet, but oh my God. June 5th isn't here yet, in Phoenix, Arizona, this incredible sight, fully captured on video of an object, then surrounded by smaller objects in a complete circle, It's just an astounding video. I mean, absolutely astounding. And I sent it, I think it was on Thursday. I knew I couldn't wait for the weekend. And so thankfully it's up there. But my God, this is an incredible video. And, you know, I'm getting emails like, Art, can it be verified? Can the footage be verified? Peter Davenport, somebody, something. This would appear to be, I mean, it's far beyond the normal kind of fuzzy UFO photograph. These lights appear to take obviously coordinated intelligent action. I don't think anybody can dispute that. How you verify the authenticity of something like this, I have no idea. But it seems to me it bears absolute further investigation. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes. It's Connie. I am from Roy, Utah.
Connie, you're going to have to yell at me. You're not
I'm
too...
I'm sorry. I'm from Roy, Utah.
Right.
Can you hear me now?
You bet.
In the late 90s, and I think it was time of year when we get fog around, and I was on my way to work. I was working early in the morning, like about 2 in the morning, I'd go to work. And my husband was up at the time, and he saw the same thing I did, only he didn't follow me to work. But
which was?
Well, on my way to work, I saw this thing that had, I couldn't see the actual object. All I could see was a blinking light that was flying low, hovering low above the trees. And it was probably maybe 10, 15 feet above the trees. And I followed it all the way to work. And on the way, it kind of hovered over the high school. Part of it was over the parking lot and part over the high school for about 3 to 5 minutes. I pulled over the side of the road and watched it. I also rolled my window down, hearing on your shows that normally there's no sound, which was the situation with me. There was no sound.
Right.
And then it was like a blink of an eye. It had moved from the high school over, which was maybe a quarter of a block, over the library. And it was stationed over there for 1 or 2 minutes. And then it kind of moved over to where my work was. And it wasn't over that very long. And then it moved over to where our airport is in Ogden, just north of Roy.
Okay, so after all of this, what is it you believe you saw?
A UFO.
Us or them? Us or them?
Them. because the lights, when they would blink, it would... Like, it appeared that it would blink off and on and one direction, and then it appeared that it was going back the other way. So it was low enough that I could see these lights, but I couldn't see the object because of the fog. It was really a weird sensation.
I understand. Here's something I don't understand, and that is why UFOs have lights at all. Either a very secret experimental U.S. program or aliens who presumably would have technology so far beyond the need for lights that we would see that it's unimaginable to me. And yet, of course, there could be many of them up there without lights, and those would never be reported. But of those that are, they count now in the millions. Millions of people have seen the kind of thing this young lady just described. It cannot be nothing. It is something. And the totality of the numbers of them represent more than just secret U.S. aircraft. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Where are you, please? Hello?
Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Hi, this is Tom. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Yes.
And the reason I called was I'd heard your program numerous times. I'm a first-time caller, but I'm a retired detective out of Kansas City.
Oh.
And speaking of Phoenix, they did have that light show that you talked about, and it seemed to be a very credible guy that had that. It was on the news here in town.
Well, the whole thing is credible, but the lights themselves and what they did, good God.
So it was like a large round light in the center, and
yes.
Showed like smaller lights were coming down, and they went around in a circle around the large light.
That's right.
And then they dissipated and went off. one at a time from around the large light before the large light dissipated.
Yeah, I mean, this is so weird and so out there. I don't know what it is about Phoenix, sir, but anybody in Phoenix better keep their eyes pointed upward.
Well, you know, as a retired detective, I have to look at everything before I believe anything. I used to be, I didn't believe any of this, but when I lived in Kansas City years ago, I was kind of an antique car collector, memorabilia collector, and I bought an old organ, and the organ was a smaller size organ, probably about, 4 feet wide and probably about 5 feet high.
Yes.
It was a pretty old organ that had the porcelain knobs that would pull out and everything on it, and a red felt background with like a speaker type deal was in. It didn't really work that well, but just a gorgeous piece, so I put it in my house, not thinking anything about it. Well, we had a larger home back in Missouri, and at that time, my youngest daughter was just a baby, and like most husbands, at late at night, I'm watching news or whatever on TV in the evening, and the baby was brand new back in the back bedroom, which is right across from our bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like something had breathed on me. You know, you just feel like a breeze on the back of your head.
Yes.
And I'd turn around, like, what the heck is that? Well, anyway, I heard a baby crying. Well, I'm thinking it's our baby, and I thought, well, my wife being there so quick, she won't even let me get up. And the crying and crying went on, and finally I thought, well, the wife can't hear that baby. I can't believe it. So I got up, started walking down the hall. Baby quit crying. I looked inside the room. The baby hadn't been crying. So I looked inside our bedroom. The wife was sitting there reading, and I said, why didn't you get up to take care of the baby? She said, what about the baby? I said, well, the baby was crying. She said, I didn't hear the baby crying. I said, you're kidding. So we started talking about different things that we felt in the house and little things going on, and she talked about one time she was in the kitchen and she was peeling some potatoes and she felt like somebody was breathing on her. I said, that's the same thing I get in the living room. And then I'd sit in the living room. We had like a second floor, a little balcony to look down at you, and I would feel like somebody was standing there at that balcony looking at me.
Bottom line, you think your house is haunted?
Well, I didn't think it was a house. We thought it was maybe that old organ. So the old organ, we saw there was an antique sale in Oklahoma, so we're going to get rid of that organ. We think that organ, maybe we brought something into the house.
Yes, well, when you advertised it, did you specify that it was haunted?
Well, nobody would buy it or anything. So what I did, I had an old bus. In fact, it used to be Dolly Parton's old bus.
Really?
And I had the hitch put on the back. Back in that part of the country, there's a muffler shop on every corner, kind of a mom-and-pop guy. And a friend of mine put a hitch on the back of that bus. We're going to drive it to Oklahoma. And he put a hitch on there that was like the Empire State Building.
Yeah, wait a minute. You're going to drive, hold it. You're going to drive the organ?
We're going to put the organ in a trailer and haul it down to this auction in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
So I went by and I had this hitch put on the back of the bus, which was done in C-channel, just heavy-duty C-channel steel.
About 30 seconds, sir.
Okay, so anyway, we put that organ in the trailer, started in that trailer, started taking down Oklahoma. The trailer hitch bends on the bus before it even leaves town. No way in the world it could have bent, but it bent. Went back and got a truck that had dual tanks on it, put it in the trailer, took that truck, got as far as the border of Oklahoma, and the tanks wouldn't switch. I ran out of fuel. I had to fight like crazy all night long to get this organ to Oklahoma to the sale.
The organ that didn't want to leave.
No. And then we got it to Oklahoma, and they had it lined up in there, and they had hundreds of items that sold for whatever they'd bring. And after the end of that auction, we kept watching people. They'd walk up and kind of look at it, wouldn't touch it, and walk away from it.
Huh.
Well, when the auction was over, everything sold in that sale,
except
but that organ did not sell.
And
nobody
so
even bid a dollar on
our
it.
Our time is up. And so the what happened? Did you have to take the organ home?
No, we drove off and left it. We couldn't believe that
you
nobody would even
there.
Bid a dollar on that gorgeous old organ. But we had so many problems, weird things in our house.
Well, that's
unbelievable.
So have these things now stopped?
They did stop after we had that problem and got rid of it and didn't bring it back to our house. We didn't have any more of those unusual problems in our house.